welcome to Section 9. My name's Damien Hall.
And I'm Dorothy. And before we get started, let me apologize for my voice. I have a little sinus thing going on, so I hope you guys can understand me. But anyway, today's show is going to be about password management, what it is, why do we need it, solutions, and lessons learned. So tell us, what is password management?
So password management is something that's a bit difficult to do because we're not just talking about passwords. We're talking about accounts to different things we have access to. Online accounts, local accounts to different servers, different devices. And for us, it's getting a bit complex because we have a network that's complicated. Even though there's only two of us, we have a lot of devices, switches, routers, and then you have like your Raspberry Pi, your workstation, your laptop. I mean, there's just so many things we have to access. So we need some way of managing all of that. And that's why we're doing this now, because I think before we do anything else, we need to make sure we can access all of our systems and we don't lose that. Before we go into what we're trying to do here in terms of the solutions we have, let's talk about what you might see in an enterprise environment, because we're always trying to relate what we do here to what you might see in a real world scenario or situation.
So give us a couple of examples of password management in an enterprise environment.
So a lot of times I think people don't talk about this, and I just recently learned about this. We have IAM, or Identity Access Management, and then you have PAM, which is Privileged Access Management. So IAM is something that we can all relate to. You have a username and password, and that's kind of your identity and access to specific resources on the network. So if you have an Active Directory environment, when you log into your laptop or workstation, that's IAM, Identity Access Management. You type in your username, your password, and Active Directory authenticates you and lets you in, and you have access to that system.
Okay.
When you access resources on the network, once you're logged in to Active Directory, you can access file servers and specific shared folders that are on that file server to give you access to whatever may be in there. You can save stuff there. You can access things there. That's Identity Access Management, meaning you have your identity and your access to specific resources.
Okay.
And that's kind of basic, you know, username, password, it's all you really need. The problem comes in when you're talking about multiple systems, things like switches, routers, online access. That's not managed by Active Directory. And then you may also have, if you're part of IT, system accounts, things that users don't have access to, but you may have a device on the network that wants access to something. Like in my previous job, we had scanned email. So the printer had an account on the file server to access a shared folder so that it could write data to that folder when you did scanned a folder is what we were working with. And so it had, you scan the document, and then it tries to access that shared folder on the file server and then saves that information within that folder.
Okay.
So how do you manage those accounts? It becomes tricky. Now, you can still have some of that as part of maybe Active Directory. I don't know how you would set that up. I don't remember exactly how we had that set up for that particular situation. But again, it's something you have to manage. And there's going to be other system accounts you may have for various things that run on that server or wherever you may have these things. So there's a lot of different things you have to manage that way. And then when we talk about like a switch or a router, that's not part of Active Directory. So you're going to have to manage that as well. There's that issue. And then when you're in a larger environment, you're going to have a thing called Privileged Access Management.
And that's PAM.
And that's PAM. Identity Access Management is where you have an identity and you have your username and password. That's your identity on the network. Now we're talking about privileged access. And one example of that is you want to give access to somebody who wants to make a change to a network device. Maybe they're part of the networking team. So they're going to have access to the switch, the router, the network equipment, right? That may be a username and password that's managed outside of Active Directory, outside of any real management solution that you may have. In other words, there's no way for you to have the same username and password in Active Directory that you're going to have on that switch.
So basically what you're saying, and I'm trying to understand this, you know, you're a regular user that works for a company. You have, you know, your identity access management to log in because you're a member of the company. But within that company, if you're a part of the IT team, and let's say you need access to a network device, then that's when the privilege access comes in, because not everybody can have access to that particular device. You have to be part of the IT team to be able to do that, or it has to be part of your job for it to be like that.
Correct. And this is okay. Where we talk about least privilege, right? Security has that least privilege.
Correct.
Kind of theory there, or best practice, where mm-hmm. you only give people access to the things they need access to get their work done.
Correct.
So if I am part of the network engineering team, I need to be able to access the network equipment. So I have to have a username and password for that. Some systems will only allow you to have like an admin login. There's no other option for that. It's just, okay, there's one username and one password. You log in and that's it.
Okay.
So then you have to share that with people. How do you do that safely? And how do you make sure that only the right people have access to that information? Right? So if I'm part of the network engineering team, maybe I need access. Management may also need access, because I may have an IT manager that wants access to everything just in case something happens and I'm not there. Then he has access, or she has access, to provide that information to whoever needs it so that they can go fix something that may be broken.
Okay.
So now you're in the situation where you have to pick and choose who gets access to different things. And that's where your PAM solution comes into play, where I can say in the PAM solution, and these are enterprise solutions, where I can say, okay, you have access to the password for a particular switch because you're part of the network engineering team. You're not part of, let's say, printer management. Maybe somebody else does printer management. Well, a printer has a login that you need, and maybe that login cannot be managed through Active Directory. Maybe you can't tie that printer to Active Directory. Since you're not part of printer management, I don't want you to have access to that.
Right.
But we still need to manage all these usernames and passwords. So we're going to have a solution that allows me to manage all the passwords in one central location. But then PAM allows me to go in there and say, okay, the printer passwords, that goes to the printer people. The switch password, the router password, that goes to the network engineering team. You're part of that team, you have access.
Okay.
And so, again, it's one central location. If I'm the IT manager, I have access to all of that. And then I can decide who gets access to the different passwords we have based on the role you play within that organization.
So what did you decide to use for password management?
On the solution side, we're not going to talk about actual enterprise solutions because we're not an enterprise. And some of those solutions are really expensive. And because there's only two of us, we're going to need access to all of the accounts equally. Because if I'm not here, you need to access something, you have to have the username and password for that. And if I'm busy, I may say, hey, you know what, this system needs to get updated. Can you do that? So you're going to have to know what the username and password is for that particular system so that you can log in and do what needs to be done. So in our case, we're going to have equal access. So what we decided to use is KeePass. Now, KeePass is a local solution, meaning you have to have it installed on your workstation or whatever. You know, it's a local thing. It's not in the cloud. It's not online. It's local. And we have looked at online solutions, and we'll talk about that in a minute. But we set up KeePass the other day, and you put in a password for that. And then there's also a key that goes along with that, because KeePass will encrypt their database of passwords.
Yeah, it was really impressive. I really liked seeing how the whole thing was done.
Yeah, it's pretty cool how they do that. And there's a couple ways you can set it up. So you can just set it up with a password. And the password lets you access the database where you have all of your usernames and passwords stored. And that's okay. And it's all encrypted. Now, when you do that, one of the things you have to understand here is how does encryption actually work? There's a key that you're using for AES encryption. And now AES encryption is like, you know, government standard. It's recommended you use that. That's why you see that everywhere. So it's good. And there is a key that you use to encrypt and decrypt the data. And that key is stored with the database. So when you type in your password, it accesses the key and decrypts the data so you can put your stuff in there. What we decided to do is take the key out of the database and store it separately. You still have a password that you type in, and then you tell it where the key file is, and then it accesses the database and decrypts the data. The nice thing about that is that you can send the database file anywhere. And even if somebody has the password, they can't access the database because they don't have the key to decrypt the data. So they can't see any of that information.
Nice.
So we keep the key separate from the database for extra security. So that's how that works. And for us, it's going to work out okay. I think we're going to have a little bit of issues with it in the beginning because we have to try to keep that password file or the database synced so that
We both have access to it.
We both have access and that my database is not out of date. It doesn't have old information. All the correct information needs to be there so that when I open it up to see what's in there, I see all of the usernames and passwords and they're all up to date. So one of the ways you can do that with KeePass is you can synchronize that database across the network. And we tried to do that with a shared folder, but for some reason on your Ubuntu workstation, that didn't seem to work at all. So we have a workaround where we're using FTP, which by the way is not secure.
It's not secure. That was my concern.
So that's a little issue that we have there. So we're synchronizing it across the network to our Synology disk station using FTP, because that was the only way we could get it to work. There is a plugin that we can get to where you can do that with SFTP, which uses SSH or FTP over SSH, which is encrypted. We might be able to pull that off. So we're going to have to get the plugin and see if we can do that or try to figure out how we can get the Windows file sharing to show up on KeePass on Ubuntu. Now, you were able to access the shared folder, but then KeePass just wouldn't see it. So there are some issues with KeePass.
But we'll have to figure it out. And then once we find the solution, we can share it.
Yeah, but for now, we're able to sync the file across the network to a shared folder. I can access it on my Windows system, and it works fine. Mm-hmm. So we have a solution that works. We're local to our own network. There's really nobody else on the network. So in terms of like a security risk level, I think there is one, but it's low.
Okay.
And then the database is encrypted anyway.
It's encrypted.
So
I was going to say, if it wasn't encrypted, I would worry more. But the fact that it is, that makes me feel a little bit better.
Yeah. And I think this is going to work out for us. It's just that we're going to have, you know, little growing pains as we try to figure out how to make it work for us.
Right.
But so far, we have something that's going to work. Now, we did have access to LastPass. And in the past, I've used something called Dishlane, which is, those are online solutions. And they work well, but some security people kind of shy away from those because they say, well, it's in the cloud. Maybe the cloud provider has access. And so I was talking to somebody the other day online in our little IRC chat room, and he says he uses Dishlane. And I was kind of surprised he did that because I thought, well, he's going to be one of those paranoid people that says, okay, we can't have anything online because it's not safe. So then he sends me a little blog of information about the actual process in which they use to make sure that the information is secure. And then he had sent me a white paper, which gives me more information about how it works. And they basically do the same thing that KeePass does. So you have a master password, you have a key file someplace, and everything is encrypted. So when you actually connect to the cloud service for Dishlane, there is the key file that's local to you. It's never stored on the server. And you can go ahead and take a look at that information online. We'll try to dig that up and so we can put that in the show notes so people can see how that works. But it's the same kind of principle. And they have, you know, AES encryption and all of that. So it's really secure. And when I looked at the information that this guy was giving me, it looked really, really good. And if you lose your master password or you forget that, you can't go to Dishlane and say, help me figure this out so I can get back in. They have no access at all to any of that because they don't have your key.
Right.
So they can't access it. Now, I tried to dig up some information on LastPass, and LastPass is a little different. They're similar into the way in which Dishlane works and KeePass works, because encryption is just encryption. You have the key, you have a master password, and that's how all of this works. But KeePass actually has a recovery method based on your device and some key file that you have on that particular device. They can actually do some sort of recovery. It's not perfect. There may be a situation where you can't recover because maybe you lost your device, you reset the device. Now, the key file that's on that device, let's say, for example, it's your phone. you don't have a recovery method anymore, and they can't recover that. So I think that at some point we may go to an online solution, because I think now that I've seen what goes on behind the scenes, it's more secure than I think people realize. And I think some IT or security professionals sort of look at that and go, ooh.
A lot of people are afraid of the cloud because I think they don't really understand how it works. And they think that if it's in the cloud, I will never be able to reach it. And, you know.
Yeah. And some of their concerns may be somewhat justified.
Right.
But I think in our case, you know, and if you're trying to find a password solution, the online ones are fine. I like Dishlane. I like the way they do things. But again, having seen what LastPass is doing as well, I don't necessarily have an issue with LastPass either. Mm-hmm. We're still going to stick with our KeePass. I think that's going to work for us. I think at the end of the day, if you're trying to do something similar to what we're doing, you have your own home lab, you have lots of accounts for personal things, bank accounts, email, whatever, use one of these. It's better to have some sort of password management solution than nothing at all.
Right. And then, you know, when you can select the one you like best. I mean, it's just, you know, what we're trying to do is letting you know it's out there. This is what it does. And, you know, hopefully it'll work for you.
Yeah. And again, we're not looking at those enterprise solutions because we're not enterprise. And I was looking at one that I thought, okay, this is kind of interesting, but the price tag is just too high.
Yeah.
And for us, it's like, okay, can I justify spending that kind of money? And the answer to that question is not really, because it's more of a, you know, it does IAM, but it also does PAM, and we don't really need PAM. Because,
yeah, we don't need PAM.
Whatever I have access to, you should have access to. Now, one of the things that I think you're going to like in this process, and we're going to do this at some point, is they have two-factor authentication. And a lot of the solutions will work with two-factor authentication. And what's really cool now is that you can get these little, they look like little USB keys. And one of them is the YubiKey, and that's recommended by a lot of places. You know, KeePass will work with it. Google will work with it. So let's say, for example, you have an account that you want to keep extra secure. You can enable two-factor authentication, and there is a way to do it with your phone where maybe they send you like a text message or an email, but you can also use Google authentication with the YubiKey. So you buy this little key. Again, it looks like a little USB key. You plug it into your laptop, and that's your two-factor authentication. So you have something you know, which is your password, and then there's something you have, which is your YubiKey.
Right.
So you stick that into the system, put in your password, it lets you in. So for those really secure email accounts that you want to have, you can say, okay, we're going to do two-factor authentication with YubiKey. Somebody wants to try to hack into your account, they can't do that, because even if they know your password, they don't have that physical YubiKey to access it. And you can also do that with the KeePass database. You can use the YubiKey, you know, you plug that in, put in your password, and then it somehow unlocks the rest of it. And without the YubiKey, you can't access it. Unfortunately for our situation, you can't have two separate YubiKeys. It has to be one YubiKey and one YubiKey only. So we couldn't have a situation where you have a YubiKey, I have a YubiKey, and we access our KeePass database.
What happens if we lose the YubiKey?
You're
dead in the water.
Well, I think there is a recovery method.
Yes, sir.
I think as long as you have the key file, you can actually unlock your database. It's kind of like the last resort.
Okay.
So what you would do in that case, and we'll have to take a look at the documentation for that, because I think what you do is you take the key file, store that in a super safe location, and then if you actually need that, then you would use that to recover your data.
And is that a one-time unlocking thing, or you can use it all the time?
We'll have to take a look at
I guess we'll have to look at it because I know that you probably haven't looked at it.
Yeah, it's a complicated thing, but there's this thing called a one-time pass.
Yeah.
And that's kind of how the YubiKey works. And there are other solutions you can get as well that do one-time pass. So basically, it generates a one-time password that lets you in. So you have your master password plus your YubiKey one-time pass, and that gets you into your database.
Yeah, because my concern would be if somebody has the YubiKey, and they're able to figure out, you know, the file key in it, and then they try and try and try, I wouldn't want them to get into it. So I'm thinking maybe the one-time thing.
So let's say, for example, they have your database, and then they have your password. They don't have your specific YubiKey. It's not going to open.
Right.
Now, if they have your master password and your key file, the encryption key to unlock the database, that's a different situation. They might be able to do it then. And I think that's right. The recovery process in case, for example, I lost my YubiKey. How do I get access to my KeePass database? You have your recovery key there, your master key file that has the key in there to decrypt the data.
Right.
So that's how you would get in. So I think what we're going to do going forward is we're going to take a look at some of these different options. We're going to figure out how we're going to use our key file and our database and figure out ways in which we can organize our usernames and passwords in there so that we don't forget something. Because in the past, we've had these issues where we try to log into a switch, we try to log into an online account. And what happens?
Yeah, we have things all over the place. So
we can't log in because we don't remember what the password is.
Right.
Or even the username. I think this is a step in the right direction. There's a lot of things that we can take a look at in terms of solutions that might work for us that are better than KeePass. But I think for now, this is one that I think is going to work well for us to at least keep us out of trouble.
Sounds good.
Let's see. What else are we working on? You should talk about a little bit about your desk and your computer and how that's working for you, and also your Raspberry Pi project.
I know, right. Well, like I was saying last week, I love my desk. I love my new computer. We put it together. It's working wonderful. So I was able to go back to my Raspberry Pi project. So that's pretty good. We went and we had to do updates because I hadn't touched the project in a long, long time. And then now they want me to do a CNC server to be able to do some kind of phishing attack. So I haven't gotten to that part of it yet, but I'm really excited about having gone back to the Raspberry Pi.
Yeah, and I think my next project is going to be updating our ITOP solution, which is going to be our ITIL-based IT management solution where we can do change management, inventory control. We can do a bunch of stuff in there.
Well, they do have a way where you can put the passwords as well in ITOP. And what I thought would be really nice is we can have the key pass. So we have all of our passwords in there. And then if they're also in ITOP, if we have some kind of a disaster, at least we have it, you know, in two different places that we would be able to recover it, right?
Well, we'll have to talk about that. You can put them in ITOP, but I don't think ITOP encrypts anything.
Right.
I'm not sure about that. So super secret stuff, we may not want to have in ITOP. Now, ITOP does have that, you know, IAM access where you have to type in a username and password to get into it. And in our case, I think we don't need to be super secret, right? We don't need, you know, top secret level security here because it's just the two of us.
Yeah, but it's really handy when we're configuring a device and we run into a problem and you can document it under that device on ITOP and you have the IP address, you have the password, you have everything in there handy, which, you know, I find it very useful.
It is very useful. And so I want to make sure that's up to date so that you can start putting devices in there. We can get our inventory control set up so that, because we have so many different devices all over the place.
Right.
And now one of the things that we're having issues with, and this goes to our password management, We have that Palo Alto firewall.
Right. We need to start working on that too.
That has documentation that needs to go into ITOP. And then it also has an account online that we use to register that and download updates and whatever else in there. So again, you know, we have a combination of things happening here where we documentation, password management, you know, there's just so much stuff going on that we need to take care of these things before they get out of hand and we can't do anything because we don't know where things are. We don't have the right documentation. We're slowly getting there. We have our patch management figured out, kind of, sort of, for the major things that we have. We've got our password management started. You're going to finish that, and you're going to be the maintainer of all of that. And then I'm going to make sure that we have our ITOP up to date so you can do the, you know, put all of our devices in there. So we're slowly moving in the right direction.
But it is a lot of work. And as you can see, when it comes to IT, it can get really chaotic when you don't take care of the little things. And they're really, I don't want to call them little things when you see how long it's taking to get all of this, you know, under control, the patch management, you know, the password management. But I think once that we are done, it's going to be really smooth for us, because then the only thing we have to worry about is working on our projects, because everything else is going to be in there. And we're not going to have to be sitting in there for a couple of hours going, where's the password for this thing? What's the IP address on this? Do you have, you know, so I think it's going to be really helpful once that we get it all set up, but getting it all taken care of is going to take a little bit of time.
Yeah. And this is something that I think we should mention every so often. And I'm going to mention it here. If you don't manage IT, no matter how small you think it might be, you're going to find yourself in that situation one day where, like us, I want to get a project done. Well, you can't. Why? We don't know what the password is to the switch. We can't configure it. So what happens? You end up spending, you know, like half hour to an hour online trying to find information on how to reset the password on a Cisco switch. These are things that happen in the real world. You'll see that in enterprise environments where they're not maintaining things the way they should be. There's no documentation, and you end up having to reset devices because you can't log into it. So right. These things do happen. Find a way to manage what you have, and you're going to be so much better off once you do that.
And what was that trigger? This? My Raspberry Pi. I was trying to get into it. Hadn't touched the project for a while, and I couldn't get into it. Turns out I did have the right password. The problem was, is for some reason, on that ARM version of the Raspberry Pi, it was having a little bit of an issue getting the password in, so we have to look into that.
Yeah, and along with your password and username that you put into KeePass, you put a little note in there about the fact that it doesn't always let you log in the way that you expect it to.
Right. It for some reason gets either sticky data, or it gets stuck, or it just doesn't look at the password right. So if we ever actually find out what the issue is with that, we can document it in there to make sure that it doesn't happen again. But for now, it's hit and miss. Sometimes the password works, other times it doesn't. So,
but the important thing is we have it documented. So we know what the password is. We know what the username is. And you have a little note in there that says, hey, sometimes it doesn't let you log in. It doesn't work right.
Right. No, and that's important.
So I think that's it for now. If you have any comments or questions, you can email us at section9.us. If you want to take a look at our show notes, we'll have some in there. You can go to section9.us. And thanks for listening.
Thank you for listening.